वंसिकपितृभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभयेभ्यश्च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Dhruva Maharaj has been insulted. He has left home after receiving his instructions from his mother, Suniti. He's left home to search for God. He has gone to the forest. He has met Narada Muni. He has taken instructions from Narada Muni. He has followed those instructions very carefully. And he has become very powerful. So powerful that inadvertently, by closing up the holes of his own body, he has choked the universal breathing, and the demigods have come to the Lord wondering what has caused their inability to breathe. So at that point the Lord responds and tells them, don't worry, it is Dhruva Maharaj who is not envious. He's not trying to cause you any trouble. But due to his austerities, all this has occurred, and I will stop him. So, in chapter 9, we hear in the first verse that the demigods, upon hearing from the Lord what the cause of the difficulty was, they became free from all fear. And they offered their obeisances and they left. And then the Lord himself mounted his great bird carrier, whose name was Garuda. And together Garuda carried the Lord, who is known as Prishnagarbha, who is no different from Lord Vishnu. He carried him to Madhuvan to see Dhruva Maharaj, who was at that time freed from all contaminations due to his performance of devotional austerities and his meditation on the Lord. And he was a great devotee by that time. So Dhruva Maharaj, by following the yogic practices, he was meditating upon the Lord within the heart. Practically speaking, he was in samadhi, fully focused. His concentration on Krishna was so deep and full that he attracted Lord Prishnagarbha to come. So he was meditating upon the Lord in the heart, and all of a sudden, that meditation broke, and he could no longer see the Lord in his heart. Why? Because the Lord was now in front of him, directly in front of him. And the Lord's form, as the second verse describes, was as brilliant as lightning, effulgent, golden. So when the Lord disappeared from his heart and his meditation broke, he immediately opened his eyes. And what did he see directly in front of him? He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom he had been meditating upon and feeling so much satisfaction upon seeing. So as soon as he saw the Lord, he became very disturbed in his great happiness. And he fell flat on the ground, paid dandavats to the Lord, fully absorbed in the ecstasy of seeing him. And it's described, his mood. He looked upon the Lord, in text 3, as if he was drinking the form, the Lord with his eyes. It was so satisfying to his eyes. Of course, eyes generally don't drink. The eyes see and the mouth drinks. But Dhruva Maharaj, practically, he was absorbing drinking up the beauty of the Lord's form with his eyes in his ecstasy. And he was kissing the lotus feet of the Lord with his mouth and embracing the Lord with his arms. So this was, he was completely in ecstasy. He was completely in ecstasy, thrilled that the object of his meditation, the object of his love, had appeared directly before him. Now, when Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, now what is the proper thing to do after offering obeisances and in ecstatic love? What is natural? One wants to say something to glorify the Lord. But Dhruva Maharaj wanted to glorify the Lord, to say something suitable to express his great realization and his great love, and to express the great ecstasy that he was feeling. But he was a young boy. And young children, they're not famous for having great expressive abilities. They're not famous for having a great vocabulary with which to express the subtleties of their happiness and their desire to pray to the Lord and please the Lord and speak in glorification of him. So he was inexperienced and he didn't know what to say. But then the Lord understood that immediately. He understood the awkward position of Dhruva Maharaj. He understood that awkward position. And out of his causeless mercy, he took his hand, the hand, because the Lord had more than one hand and more than two hands and four hands, and one of those hands held the kanch, or the shank, and he touched Dhruva's forehead with that kanch shell. Dhruva Maharaj was standing before him with his folded hands, and when the Lord touched him, reciprocating with Dhruva's desire to praise him with his prayers, the Lord touched him with his kanch shell. And Dhruva, by that touch of the Lord, Dhruva became fully, his realizations increased still further, and that was the Lord's blessing upon Dhruva. Let's hear Prabhupada's purport to that fourth verse. Every devotee wants to chant the transcendental qualities of the Lord, because a devotee is one who realizes the Lord. He is in touch with the Lord. He's on the transcendental platform, and naturally, because of his love for Krishna, because to realize Krishna, to understand him, means to love him, because his qualities are all attractive. So every devotee who is actually a devotee, he wants to chant the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Devotees are always interested in hearing about the Lord's transcendental qualities, and they are always eager to glorify these qualities. But sometimes they feel inconvenienced by humbleness, by humility. They don't feel they have the ability to either love or glorify the Lord. This is their humility for a real full devotee. Now, how does Krishna deal with such devotees? The personality of Godhead being situated in everyone's heart specifically gives a devotee intelligence to describe him. It is therefore understood that when a devotee writes or speaks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his words are dictated by the Lord from within. So it's very interesting, because the devotee is glorifying the Lord, and the inspiration and the ability to do that is also coming from the Lord. Because what can please the Lord is nothing of the material world. So actually speaking, devotional service, including kirtanam, or glorification of the Lord, is not of the material world, but it's the Lord's internal energy. So it is reciprocating The Lord's internal energy is Bhakti Devi. And with Bhakti, one can please Krishna and glorify Krishna, not otherwise. So it is Krishna's energy mixed with the sincere desire of the devotee that is what devotional service is made out of, including kirtanam, or glorification of the Lord. So therefore, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam, Prabhupada explains in the next sentence. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter. To those who constantly engage Bhajatam Pritipurvakam in the transcendental loving service of the Lord from within, the Dhammi means I give, the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam. I give them, I dictate to them what to do next in order to serve Him. Now that is the perfect and most wonderful position of devotional service, and that is what everyone is truly longing for, to be instrumental for the Lord, so that our individuality is fully used in Krishna's service, under the control of Krishna, but yet it's our individuality and our free will, and we are choosing it, but the inspiration is coming from Krishna, and we are accepting that inspiration. So the Lord from within dictates what to do next in order to serve Him. So this is very mystical and very wonderful. When Dhruva Maharaj felt hesitant, not knowing how to describe the Lord for want of sufficient experience, the Lord, out of His causeless mercy, touched His kanchal to Dhruva's forehead, and he was transcendentally inspired. This transcendental inspiration is called Brahma Maya, because when one is thus inspired, the sound he produces exactly corresponds to the sound vibration of the Vedas. And this is actually the secret of preaching. Krishna Shakti Nahivina Tarpavartana. That means that no one who is not empowered, only those who are empowered, can spread the Lord's glories all over the world. That means that Krishna is doing it through a devotee. It is Krishna's energy that is working through that devotee's sincerity. Because of the devotee's sincere desire to serve the Lord, then the Lord will use His own energy, bhakti, through that devotee. And the Lord will be saying, oh, look how my devotee is serving so nicely. And the devotee will be saying and thinking, I'm not doing anything, it is just Krishna's mercy. So this is the perfect relationship where the devotee is instrumental for the Lord, and this is the desire. And, oh Lord, please allow me to serve you. Text 5. So in Dhruva, he was touched by the kanchal of the Lord, and he became purified, inspired, directly connected to the Lord. At that time, Dhruva Maharaj became perfectly aware of the Vedic conclusions. He understood the entirety of the Vedic scriptures. And he understood the absolute truth and the Lord's relationship with all living entities. So he understood everything perfectly by the Lord's mercy, by the merciful touch of the Lord. In accordance with the line of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, whose fame is widespread, Dhruva, who in the future would receive a planet which would never be annihilated, even during the time of dissolution, he offered his deliberate and conclusive prayers. So we'll read some of this purport of Prabhupada's. Dhruva Maharaj, this is in the fourth line, Dhruva Maharaj never went to any school or academic teacher to learn the Vedic conclusion. Well, then how did he learn it? But because of his devotional service to the Lord, as soon as the Lord appeared and touched his forehead with his conch shell, automatically the entire Vedic conclusion was revealed to him. That is the process of understanding Vedic literature. One cannot understand it simply by academic learning. The Vedas indicate that only to one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, as well as in the spiritual master, only to such a person is the Vedic conclusion revealed. Because there is nothing that we can do by dint of our intellectual abilities or anything else that can make the depths of these understandings actually enlighten the heart. We cannot force that or gain it by our own power. Rather, it's descending. So that is the great trick of Dhruva Maharaj. So that is the process of understanding Vedic literature. One cannot understand it simply by academic learning, although it is not, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't study the Shastras. It means that by academic learning, studying it in an academic way, it does not allow us to grasp the depths of Krishna consciousness. The Vedas indicate that only to one who has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord, as well as in the spiritual masters, the Vedic conclusion revealed. The example of Dhruva Maharaj is that he engaged himself in devotional service to the Lord according to the order of his spiritual master, Narada Muni. As a result of his rendering such devotional service with great determination and austerity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally manifested before him, himself before him. Dhruva was only a child. He wanted to offer nice prayers to the Lord, but because he lacked sufficient knowledge, he hesitated. But by the mercy of the Lord, as soon as the Lord's conch shell touched his forehead, he became completely aware of the Vedic conclusions. And then skipping a little bit. Dhruva Maharaj wanted to have the kingdom of his father. But his father refused even to allow him to get on his lap. In order to fulfill his desire, the Lord had already created a planet known as the pole star, Dhruvaloka, which was never to be annihilated, even at the time of the dissolution of the universe. Dhruva Maharaj attained this perfection not by acting hastily. What does hastily mean?
Passionately.
Yeah, passionately. What else? Huh? Yeah? Thoughtlessly? Impatiently?
Rashly.
Huh?
Rashly.
Rashly, yeah. But by patiently executing the order of the spiritual master, that's how he acted. And therefore he became so successful that he saw the Lord face to face. Now he was further enabled by the causeless mercy of the Lord to offer fitting prayers to the Lord. To glorify or offer prayers unto the Supreme, one needs the Lord's mercy. One cannot write to glorify the Lord unless one is endowed with his causeless mercy. Practically, one can't do anything wonderful in Krishna's service without being endowed in with his mercy, without mercy. So therefore, we have to be very patient in the execution of devotional service. And it's very hard because we tend to, if we get enthusiastic, we want the result immediately. And if we don't get the result immediately, we get impatient and we lose our enthusiasm. So we need both patience and enthusiasm. Utsahanistam daryat. Patience, enthusiasm, and firm conviction. So all these qualities are required to go forward. Now here, so Dhruva Maharaj has been empowered basically by the Lord to offer prayers. So it will be interesting to see what he says. Now this is the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. So we have to learn the lessons that we have to learn at this particular point. And Dhruva Maharaj will teach us. And what he says here is directly in harmony with the Vedic conclusions. He's not going to be speculated due to the fact that he's realized. So he's seeing the Lord directly in front of him. And remember, he was so insulted. Why was he insulted? Because his father wouldn't get on the lap, because his stepmother told him that you'll never get the kingdom, you'll have to die to get the kingdom. And he was determined. Narada Muni told him, go home. You shouldn't take these insults seriously. He told Narada, I want a kingdom bigger than my father's. Narada instructed him. He followed the instructions to such a degree that he saw the Lord, and now he had that such a desire in his heart for that kingdom, and he wanted to see the Lord. Is he now going to say, "Oh, my dear Lord, I want a kingdom"? What do you think? Give me a kingdom bigger, just like a little child said, "I want an ice cream" or something like that. When God comes, he prays and he asks him for an ice cream. Something like that, a kingdom. Is that what he's going to pray for? How will he glorify the Lord? What will he say? He's no longer childish. His childish mind has been removed by the touch of the kancha. What is the mature realization that he has upon seeing the Lord whose form was effulgent like lightning? So from text 6 to text 17, 12 verses, there are different prayers by Dhruva Maharaj. The first three, 6, 7, and 8, he first describes who he is seeing. What is the nature of that personality whom he is seeing? Who he is seeing? "My dear Lord," Dhruva said, "you are all powerful." What does all powerful mean? Even that is an incredible concept. What does all powerful mean?
One is power of everything.
Of everything. Over everything, of everything. He can do anything. That means that nothing is beyond his power. He has power over everything. He can create even the things that don't exist. He can create. And the things that do exist, he can destroy. And he can easily make the impossible happen. Because impossible means impossible for us. So therefore he has achintya shakti. He's all powerful. He can do anything. Just think of what all powerful means. Just think of what all powerful means. Anything he can do. "You are all powerful. After entering within me, you have enlivened all my sleeping senses, my hands, legs, ears, touch sensation, life force, and especially my power of speech." What does that mean? He's saying that I'm a new person now. Now I think this is me. But this is, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, we're sleeping now. Just like when we're asleep, we think that person in the dream is us. But it doesn't possess all the different energies and powers of the real person who is us. So similarly, Dhruva Maharaj previously was thinking, "I'm Dhruva Maharaj and this is me," but now he's saying, due to the all-powerfulness of the Lord, the way that the Lord is manifesting his power, is he's awakened, Dhruva Maharaj. Each one of his senses is awake now. He's really seeing. He's really smelling with transcendental senses. He's really touching, tasting. His being is awake. So just imagine what it would be if we're asleep now. Some of us may even be that kind of asleep now. But even aside from that, even the ones of us who are awake or asleep, who happen to be awake, just imagine to be really awake. We can't imagine, actually, because when you're in a dream, if you're dreaming that's you, you really think that's you, and you can't imagine another existence. So Dhruva Maharaj, now awake by the touch of the Lord's conch shell, especially, he says, his power of speech is awake, and he offers his obeisances unto the Lord. We'll read from the third paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. "When Dhruva Maharaj, therefore, found this difference within himself, He could immediately understand that it was because of the causeless mercy of the Lord. He offered obeisances to the Lord with great respect and reverence, completely understanding that the Lord's favor was upon him. This spiritual enlivenment, so we would all, we're here, sitting here in the temple because we all want to be awake in Krishna consciousness and become real devotees and awaken our realized relationship with Krishna. So what did Dhruva Maharaj do to it? What awakened Dhruva Maharaj? What awakened him? The kansha, or the Lord's mercy, his causeless mercy. And what caused the Lord's causeless mercy to be upon him?
Sincerity.
His sincere and very determined devotional service. Very determined, sincere, determined devotional service. Intense desire. He offered obeisances to the Lord with great respect and reverence, completely understanding that the Lord's favor was upon him. The spiritual enlivenment of Dhruva Maharaj's senses and mind was due to the action of the internal potency of the Lord. In this verse, therefore, the word swadhamna means by spiritual energy. Spiritual enlightenment is possible by the mercy of the spiritual energy of the Lord. It also means the internal energy of the Lord, antaranga shakti or ladini shakti sanvit shakti. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is first addressed to the spiritual energy of the Lord Hare. That is Srimati Radharani. This spiritual energy acts when a living entity, now we, again, naturally we want the spiritual energy to act upon us and to awaken us, because now we're sleeping. As Prabhupada will quote later the song of Bhaktivinoda, jeeb jago, gora chandra vole. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is calling out, wake up, sleeping souls. Now you are caught in the net of Maya. Wake up, jeeb jago. So what will make that internal energy? The internal energy is that which wakes us up, the spiritual energy. So what causes the internal energy to wake us up? When a living entity fully surrenders and accepts his position as an eternal servitor. So this is one of the main themes that we've been hearing about. What puts us asleep in the lap of the witch Maya? It is that desire to enjoy, be the center of existence. And therefore we are placed within the material world. This is the fulcrum, the central point, enjoyer or servant. So when we accept our position of fully surrender to our position as a servant eternally of Krishna. So those who wish to surrender to Krishna, to merge in with Krishna, don't accept that they are servants. They're doing some service, but they don't want to be eternal servants. So they don't get the full mercy of Krishna. They don't get the full realization. So he surrenders and fully accepts his position as an eternal servitor. So if we wonder why we are not yet awake, or we're sometimes awake and sometimes doze off, this is why. We have to fully surrender and accept our position as Krishna's eternal servant. When a person places himself at the disposal or order of the Supreme Lord, that is called Sevan Mukha. At that time, the spiritual energy gradually reveals the Lord to him. I found that quite interesting. When I was preparing for the class, I had a particular question in my mind. And that was more or less the answer. I was asking, why, Krishna? Why? Why? Why does it take so long? It seems like that sometimes. And there was the answer.
Place yourself at the disposal of the Supreme Lord.
The voice spoke out from the page, not from the sky. And when we hear something like that, sometimes we think, maybe there's another answer. Maybe I should turn the page or something like that. That was the first prayer of Yuvas. You have woken me up. Now the second one. My Lord. So these up to eight will describe the position of the Lord and what he's done. So he's enlivened Yuva completely. My Lord, you are the Supreme One. So we heard that he's the all-powerful one. So only if one's all-powerful, one can be supreme. Because what does supreme mean? Yeah, the topmost. Yeah, there is no one. He's called Asama Udha. Asama means equal, and Udha means higher. So Asama Udha means that no one is higher and no one is equal to him. He is the supreme. And to be the supreme, that means no one is outside your power. And for no one to be outside of your power, you have to be all powerful. So you are the Supreme One, but by your different energies, you appear differently in the spiritual and material worlds. You create the total energy of the material world by your external potency, and after creation, you enter within the material world as the Super Soul. You are the Supreme Person, and through the temporary modes of material nature, you create varieties of manifestations, just as fire entering into wood of different shapes burns brilliantly in different varieties. So as fire burns, it is the same fire, but it appears different in different wood that it, when it's burning, different shapes of wood and different kinds of wood. Similarly, the Lord is, and his energy is the same, but it's manifest differently depending upon what it's entering within. So in the material world, he is the Super Soul. Same energy, he is the Super Soul. The same Lord is the Super Soul, and his energy is everywhere in the material world. And the same Lord, with, in one sense, it's a different energy, but it's coming from the same Lord, so in that sense they're both spiritual energies, and they're both the same energy in the sense that it's the Lord's energy, in that sense it's the same energy. That different energy is creating the spiritual world. So Vishnu Shakti Paraprakta Chitra Gyakya Tetapara Vidya Karma Sanganya Tritiya Shakti Ichite. So Dhruva is saying that you, with your energy, you've enlivened me, and with your energy, you have created and have spread throughout the entirety of the material world. What does that mean? That Krishna is everywhere in the material world. There is one energy, Krishna, and he is pervading the material world through that energy. And the Lord is also supporting the spiritual world too. So this is what it means to be the supreme. Nothing is equal or above. We'll read some of the purport, not so much. Dhruva Maharaj, upon realizing the Vedic conclusion, says, "You are spread all over the cosmic manifestation by your energy." So he's not saying you, the Supreme, is energy. He's saying there's an energetic, there's a source of the energy, and that energy is spread all over the world. In one sense, there's no difference between the energy and the energetic, so you can say that the Supreme is spread all over the world. But there is a subtle difference too. One is the source and one is the product. One is the energy and one is the energetic. One is the sun and one is the rays of the sun, the energy of the sun. One is the fire and one is the heat and light that emanate from the fire. One is the president and the other is the government, the rest of the government. So Dhruva Maharaj, upon realizing the Vedic conclusion, says, you are spread all over the cosmic manifestation by your energy. This energy is basically spiritual because it's coming from Krishna. But because it acts in the material world temporarily, it is called maya or illusory energy. In other words, for everyone but the devotees of the Lord, of the Lord's energy, for everyone but the devotees of the Lord's, the energy acts as the external energy. So this is an interesting point. Dhruva Maharaj could understand this fact very nicely, and he could understand that also that the energy and the energetic are one and the same. The energy cannot be separated from the energetic. In other words, two points. That everything is coming from Krishna, so there's nothing separate from him, even though he is the source of everything. So then, once accepting that everything is Krishna's, coming from him, as the sunlight comes from the sun, that even though this manifestation of Krishna is in the material world, the devotees can see it connected to Krishna because it's Krishna's energy. And therefore, because they see it connected to Krishna, they use it in Krishna's service. And although it is material energy, it is then spiritualized because it's being used in connection with Krishna. So the devotees can escape maya in that way by using the material world in Krishna's service, not thinking themselves the proprietor, and therefore Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach this very thing. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogam Shikshar Kameka Purusha Pranasi Krishna Chaitanya Sarira Dari Kripam Buddhya Yastamaham Prabhadi. To teach this thing, Vairagya Vidya, detached using everything in Krishna's service. And thereby one can be in the material world but not be in the material world, because one's consciousness is not material. This is very wonderful. So Dhruva Maharaj is saying here basically that it is Krishna, the Supreme One, who is in the who is pervading the material world. Text 8. Oh my master, Lord Brahma is fully surrendered unto you. In the beginning you gave him knowledge, and thus he could see and understand the entire universe. Just as a person awakens from sleep and visualizes his immediate duties. You are the only shelter of all persons who desire liberation, and you are the friend of all those who are distressed. How, therefore, can a learned person who has perfect knowledge ever forget you? So what is Dhruva Maharaj saying? He's saying that, oh Lord, you are the Supreme. Your energy is making this material and spiritual world. And you're so, by your grace, Brahma was able to create the material world. By your grace, one gets liberation, freedom from the material world, only by your grace. And by your grace, one who is distressed gets his distress removed. So therefore, how could a person who has knowledge of you and knowing what you are doing and what your potency is, how could he forget you? So we'll read a little of Prabhupada's purport here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be forgotten even for a moment by His surrendered devotees. Why? What is it in the devotee's consciousness that does not allow the devotee to forget Krishna? What elements are in there?
Surrender.
What is the element? Specifically dependence. Because at every moment he's depending upon Krishna. And this is what Krishna explains in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Chaitasya sava kamani maya sanyasya mat para buddhi yogam upasita mat chita satatam bhava. He tells Arjuna to always do your devotional service, but in such service be fully conscious of me. That means being dependent on me. And what is the opposite of being dependent on Krishna? Being independent of Krishna. And everyone who feels himself independent of Krishna has to be in the material world, and those who feel themselves dependent upon Krishna can be in the spiritual world. So in the material world, everyone likes to be independent. Everyone is trying to become more and more independent. Everyone. Whatever we're dependent on, we're trying to break that dependence in the material world. People are dependent on their family, so they want to break free from that and become independent of their family. Why? Because they think their family or whatever is inhibiting their ability to enjoy themselves. So we break free, independent. One country wants to break free from another country, a part of one country, an island wants to break free from the group of violence. Why? It's because we're thinking that the cause of our problem is our dependence. We want to be independent. But it's actually ludicrous because we're dependent on so many things and we can't be independent. What's the first thing you think you're dependent? When you think you're dependent, what is the first thing you think of when you think of things you're dependent on?
Breathing,
that's the first one I think of. You think of eating. So we can't, no, I mean, well, it's, I don't think that's any... No, it's quite true, you know? If Krishna doesn't supply the breath, we die, as the demigods found out. And if Krishna doesn't supply the food, we die. And even if he does supply the food, if he doesn't supply the fire of digestion, we die. So we're dependent at every moment. We think we're dependent on light to see. It's not our eyes that see. We're dependent on Krishna in every way. So we can't be independent. We can't be. It's impossible. Impossible. So the devotees declare their dependence upon Krishna. So the devotee understands that the Lord's causeless mercy is beyond his estimation. He cannot know how much he is benefited by the grace of the Lord. The more a devotee engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, the more encouragement is supplied by the energy of the Lord. What's the opposite of encouragement?
Discouragement.
Now, we should ask ourselves, which do we like to be? Encouraged or discouraged? So sometimes we get discouraged. So here, Prabhupada is explaining it. The cure for spiritual discouragement. Did anyone remember what it is? Yeah. The more a devotee engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, the more encouragement is supplied by the energy of the Lord. So the more sometimes means fuller. That's actually the more also. Because
intensely,
we...
Intensely.
Huh?
You mean intensely, not quantitatively.
Yeah, not necessarily quantitatively. I mean quantitatively. That, you know, more and more and more, like more of these and do more of that. But more means also going inward, not only outward. Because if the outward is not based on the inward, then it will fall over like a house without a strong foundation. In the wind, it will get knocked over. But if the foundation is very strong, it means the good example, the best example is the trees that have the deep roots, very deep roots. So we want to make sure our roots are very, very deep. The roots of our devotional service are very, very deep. So more means deep, and the external will also come. But also sometimes when we build up the external, that forces us, when we realize that our position is shaking, that forces us to put the roots or the foundation deep so they can complement each other. But it doesn't last long. The building of our devotional service doesn't last long if everything that exists is above ground only. It has to become deep. Because we tend to act with body. And we think that's it. And then more than that is the mind, and then the intelligence, and then the actual. But the discouragement is an encouragement to go deeper, more fully and more sincerely. I mean, one looks at it like that, because Maya has two meanings. One is mercy. So, in other words, although it doesn't seem like it when Maya is acting in that way, but that means that Krishna, through that energy, is pushing you. In other words, if you were just interested in getting a particular work from someone, if you were a boss, and you were just interested in getting work, some money, making money from that person, then you'd just be satisfied and you'd never give that person a hard time. Right? Because you'd be satisfied with the superficial service that he's doing because it's providing the superficial result that you want. But Krishna doesn't want the superficial result. He says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yomam Bhakta Prachati. He even wants a leaf or a fruit or a flower if it's offered with devotion. So he wants the devotion. Asnami Paratatmana. That gives Krishna his appetite. So he wants the devotion. So until we're real devotees, Krishna is going to keep pushing us. So that discouragement is saying, well, that's not good enough.
So when we feel discouraged, we should know that we're not doing good enough.
But it means that we have... means we have to place ourselves in Krishna's hands. That's good enough. And try our best. And surrender. So it depends what level our devotional service is, what it means. So it may mean we're not working hard enough, if we're being lazy. Or it may mean we have to place ourselves in Krishna's hands. Or it may mean that we have to engage our mind more.
What does it mean, place yourself in Krishna's hands?
Depend on Krishna. You try, in other words, give up the tendency to control.
It's easy to say.
Huh?
It's easy to say that, to give it up. But what does it mean practically, that you don't make your own decisions?
Mm-hmm. No. It means that you place yourself in Krishna's hands. It's not easy to say when you're sitting here, because then you have to listen to yourself saying it. And everyone looks at you. But what does it mean? That's what it means. That's what surrender means. There's six limbs of surrender. There's six parts of the surrender, and that's the foremost. Fully dependent on Krishna. So we try to serve Him, keep our consciousness on Him, and fully depend on Him and accept what He gives us as results, as His mercy. So all those. But depend on Him for everything. In other words, you place yourself in His hands. So the results on all different levels. In other words, there's an inner dependence on Krishna that has to be, that's developed. And from that comes appreciation, and from that comes love. Clear? Or?
No.
Okay, what's foggy?
No, I have
to
think about it.
Yeah, right. So, see, it depends. You do what Krishna wants. And how do you find out what Krishna wants? The Guru, Vaishnava, Shastra. You have to do some service. Have to do service. You can't be a devotee and not do service, because that means there's nothing in. Because just like by Dhruva's appreciation of Krishna, it has to come out his mouth. So devotee means you want to do something for Krishna, even if it's hearing. I don't mean to say it's something always. Can be hearing or chanting or something like that, but you have to do something for Krishna's pleasure. That's what it means. So in doing that for Krishna's service, for Krishna's pleasure, the mind has to be thinking it's for Krishna's pleasure. And in doing it for Krishna's pleasure and depending upon Him for the result, whatever happens, we accept that there's some, that Krishna's mercy is in that. And always thinking of Krishna in the midst of this and depending upon Him continuously. Accepting everything that's favorable, rejecting everything that's unfavorable, keeping oneself fully, faithfully under His protection, always keeping oneself meek and humble, protected by Krishna, giving oneself fully to Krishna like that. Is that? So if you ask what does it practically mean, so those are the guidelines, and we take those and apply them to our life. And so we have to think, well, what is my service? What is my service? Whether it's going to school, or how am I doing this in Krishna's service? So, say if we're going to school, for instance, we could be thinking, please Krishna, I'm depending on You, not only for the result, but I don't even know how to use this in Your service. Please, you let me know. And I'll ask the other devotees, I'll do my part and depend on You. How can I use this in Krishna's service? And so there's many ways. And then, we do that intelligently for Krishna's pleasure. Because we're tiny and He's great, He's the Lord, and we're constitutionally His servant. It's natural. And then we keep our mind on it, on pleasing Krishna when we do it, and we depend on Him for the results. So the dependence is in all the stages, not only for the results. The surrender, the giving oneself to Krishna, is in all the stages, not only in the results. It's in the giving of the service, in the choosing of the service, in every stage of it. And then what the results come, it doesn't only mean we're detached from the results, but we see Krishna in the results. Well, we can also read the book. it's quite good.
I'm in the recording of the class.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but. So let's finish this purport and then we'll stop for the day. In the Bhagavad Gita, The Lord says that those who are constantly engaged in devotional service with love and affection, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, gives him intelligence from within, and thus they may make further progress. So we've already heard how he's saying, Prabhupada is explaining that the Lord gives everything from within. He said that from before. He helps, he reciprocates. Because you want to serve him, he wants to serve you. And he serves you by giving the intelligence by which you can serve him, which gives, and because that gives you pleasure, because you want to serve him, and then he gets pleased, you're pleased because he's pleased, and then he's pleased because you're pleased, and it keeps on going. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that to those who are constantly engaged in devotional service with love and affection, constantly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives intelligence from within, and thus they may make further progress. Being so encouraged, the devotee can never forget at any moment the Personality of Godhead. Now why doesn't he forget? He always feels obliged to him for having achieved increased power in devotional service by his grace. So he's humble. He doesn't get proud. He thinks this is only by Krishna's grace. Saintly persons like Sanak, Sanatan, and Lord Brahma were able to see the entire universe by the mercy of the Lord, through knowledge of the Lord. So that gives us a practical concept of how much one's power can increase. You can see the whole universe through knowledge of the Lord, some devotees. There's even more wonderful things devotees can do, but that's to give us an idea. Okay. So tomorrow, I thought these prayers may take some time. They're nice. Because you can go over them quickly and get an idea of how they progress and everything, or you can go over them in detail and try to take the instructions and see how I can improve my own devotional service in this way. And of course, you should do that. Yeah. Did you want to? Was that a finger raise indicating a hand raise indicating a question? Well, I think you do.
I have two questions.
I didn't think you had two, though.
you mentioned that spiritual realization is that you realize how dependent you are upon Krishna, that you realize your dependent, some degree, to digest food, everything.
Service, even.
And I've heard that constitutionally we're and given the quality of independence, with which we can choose to serve Krishna in different ways.
Yeah. But that way we're only indirectly dependent on Krishna, as opposed to directly dependent on Krishna. Even if we choose to be independent of Krishna, we're still completely dependent on him.
Well, we're dependent on Krishna to be independent.
He gives it now. Even if we choose in our consciousness, see, the choosing of independence is basically a choosing to not recognize our dependence on Krishna. Therefore, it's called illusion. So we're not really independent of Krishna, but we're thinking we're independent of Krishna. That thinking springs through the misuse of our free will, the misuse of our actual independence, our free will. We can't be independent of Krishna, but we can, by Krishna's grace, see ourselves as independent and separate from Krishna. That's why Maya means is not. We're seeing something that doesn't exist. Illusion. Is that clear?
And the second question was, one who is illusion into thinking that they are independent of Krishna, and independent enjoyer, independent controller.
Stop criticizing the speaker. That's not polite.
How does one? What can someone meditate upon, or something, to besides obviously Hare Krishna mantra? But what can one think of to become satisfied as seeing oneself as a servant?
Well, there's hundreds of answers to that question. You know, well, one is that it's impossible to be independent. You could think of that, and to think yourself tiny. Maybe that one has to precede thinking yourself a servant. You can meditate on the fact that you're going to die, and there's nothing you can do about it. That makes you feel tiny and insignificant, and 50 years from now, no one will even remember you ever existed. That could tend to make one feel very insignificant. 60 years or whatever it is, no one will even remember that you ever existed, and that, you know, it's shaking.
How about that one that the Prabhupada used to Tamal Krishna Maharaj when he told him one place and one country and one planet.
Yeah.
One universe. Yeah. One person. You can feel pretty small.
Yeah. Look up at the stars in the sky. That makes you feel pretty small. Yeah. And then how does one can't avoid serving either. That point comes out so many times in purports. Either you serve your senses, like that sign, I saw it again yesterday. It always strikes me about, what's it, the Sprite, is it? Which says, obey your thirst. You've seen that one? Obey your thirst, and this guy's there. So it's true. And as soon as you see that too, you want to drink a Sprite. At least I do. Obey my thirst. Yes, Prabhu. So we can't stop serving. You have to obey your thirst, or obey your boss, or obey your mind, or obey yours, or Krishna, spiritual master. So we can't avoid the position of being servant, although we want to be independent. So if it's unavoidable, why argue about it? I mean, but to convince ourselves of it, to really see it. To realize it isn't easy. Or if you want to make yourself feel, if you want to know your insignificance, go into the downtown of any city in the world, including little Perth, and announce to everyone loudly that Edward is here. I wouldn't advise you to try that in New York. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we'll continue with Dhruva Maharaj's prayers. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.